The sound you're listening to, my friends, this is Armand DeMille with you at the Positive Mind here on WBAI 99.5 FM. In studio with me, Sherry Siegel. The sound you're listening to, is it familiar? Sherry, what about you? Is that a familiar sound?
It is. I listened to it for many, many hours in medical school.
In medical school, they said, listen to this sound. It's a remarkable thing because, you know, one of the things I found, I always wondered why the ocean was so appealing. Why is the sound of the ocean so important? And I remember some researchers who took a recording of the ocean and they listened to it up closely and they found that it has a sound very similar to this on close examination. Think of the waves. Well, what is this sound? Mickey Hart. You know who Mickey Hart is. Quite a creative genius of rhythm instruments. He decided when his baby was being born to record the sound of the baby in utero. This is the heart of a baby. Without the music, right? Maybe, but for Mickey Hart, they would have had the instruments, but the heart of a baby. And when you listen to this, what happens to you? What happens to you internally if you listen? Now, if you listen to a baby's heartbeat, does that change you in any way? I know it does me. Does it affect you, Sherry?
It does. It feels very calming to me.
It feels like you're slowing down to meet it. You know, like your heart's going to meet its heart. Isn't that it? As if the essence of life is that we eventually will move to the perfect rhythm of a baby's heart.
I know that baby cats and dogs and babies, human babies, are also calmed when they feel the heartbeat of their mother, or even sometimes a clock in the crib can make them feel more calm.
Well, here's a question we've asked. Is it that they are calmed by the heartbeat of their mother? What if their mother was just all hyped up and so busy and in a rush? Or is what happens the synchronicity between the mother and the baby? When the mother holds the baby, does her heart slow to meet the baby's? And then when that happens, there's a real bonding between the two of them? This is kind of what we're talking about today. This is Armand DeMille with Dr. Sherry Siegel. We're talking about the rhythms in our body, in our life, that control us. And we're talking about it from a place a little off the ordinary, the simple thing. You know, everybody's got to be in rhythm. You got to catch rhythm. You know, if I had rhythm, it's a little bigger than that. Sherry brings this to me with some kind of fascinating thought. What's your thought around it, Sherry?
Well, it makes, when I think about the changing seasons, it made me think about the rhythms and the beat of life. And I thought, in our own bodies, we have so many different rhythms and so many different waves. We have the heartbeat. I think everyone thinks about their heartbeat and the beat of their pulse. But not only that, in our GI tracts, that's our intestines and our food tube, it has peristalsis, which are waves that take the food from the mouth and the stomach all the way down to the intestines.
Slow that down for a minute. That's fascinating. I always thought of peristalsis. I didn't think of it as a rhythm. But of course it is. It's as oceanic as any rhythm you'll find. It's waves bringing, like if you had a box in the ocean coming to the shore, you know, the waves would bring it to the shore. And so this pulse is. That's what peristalsis is.
Absolutely. And when that's out of sync, we feel cramps, for example. Sometimes the intestines can even collapse on itself, called intussusception, and that's because those waves are not in synchrony.
And a lot of things inhibit those waves. I know a lot of narcotics, when people take them, part of the reason they get constipated is because there is no peristalsis, and
that's
there
right.
is no rhythm. So losing your rhythm is like being constipated. We're going to look into this, even though that's cute to say. There are other cycles we have as well. There's the eye movements, which are called, what about eye movements? They're called circadies?
Well, saccades. And so saccadic movement is what happens when you're on a train, for example, and you're looking outside. Your eye fixes on something, and then it has to do a little jerk to refix as the train moves by. So if I were to look at your eyes as you're traveling on a train, we'd see them flick back and forth. And sometimes when people have vertigo, that's that spinning feeling that people have when they feel nauseated and the world is going around.
Well, where's the rhythm there now? What is the rhythm? Is the rhythm the eye flick?
Exactly. And that's what a saccade is.
There is peristalsis, there's diurnal, which is the sleep-wake cycle, which is now bringing us into the whole idea of rhythms that work differently. One rhythm we know about is kind of the beating of the heart. Then there are the beating of many other organs. And now we have rhythms that take place in the body. Sleep-wake brings us to an issue called the pineal gland. I never knew that the pineal gland was so important. Henry Miller, Reflect on Music and the Pineal Gland, in his semi-autobiographical novel, Tropic of Cancer. He said, my whole aim in life is to get closer to God. That is, to get nearer to myself. That's why it doesn't matter to me what road I take, but music is very important. Music is a tonic for the pineal gland, he said. Music isn't Bach or Beethoven. Music is the can opener of the soul, beautifully said. It makes you terribly quiet inside, makes you aware that there's a roof to your being. Now let's go with that. Where does the pineal gland, and what is the pineal gland? And talk to us about it, Sherry.
Yeah, the pineal gland is a little tiny.
Pineal, not pineal?
I say pineal, you say pineal.
Right.
It's tomato, tomato. But the pineal gland is just a very tiny gland. It's amazing how this pea-sized gland that sits in the middle, like the very middle of your brain.
The very middle?
Mm-hmm. Sits between the two lobes of the thalamus. It has a lot of, it interacts with the hypothalamus, and very, very powerful gland.
Well, wait, now, if it sits in the middle of the brain, how do you access it through the eyes?
Well,
What's its relationship to the eyes? That's my question.
Great question. It's thought that embryologically, the cells that are in the pineal gland respond to light and dark just the way your retina responds to light and dark, and that there's some relationship between the receptors or photoreceptors in the back of the eye or the retina and the pineal gland itself.
And there seems to be a clear one, because if you have melatonin, it's produced by the pineal gland. Is that true?
Yes, it is.
So melatonin, which is one of our big sleep aids, right? And if light, does light react to the pineal gland? Is that the light reactor? Is that the light sensor? Is that who tells us, you know, hey, it's light outside, it's dark outside? Because if that's so, then it's going to affect our sleep cycles.
Yes, it does. It definitely affects our circadian rhythm.
So the pineal gland is, instead of drinking a glass of warm milk, you should put like a warm towel over your pineal gland at night. Right.
Yeah, that might be a very interesting
experiment. Why don't we go directly for that instead of people taking these things that knock themselves out?
It's true, but it's a little hard to get to since it's so deep in the brain.
You know, it's funny you say that, because a couple of tricks. I've been around a while and I've watched some of the gurus who have tricks, the ones who give big lectures, and they have large groups. And one of the things they like to do is push on a spot between the eyes, right above the nose, right? And they say, supposedly, they could access the pineal gland by stimulating that. And it's an interesting thing, because when you do stimulate it, you do see a kind of a, you get a kind of a funny feeling, and you do see a kind of a lightness that takes place. So it's something that could be manipulated and something we should pay pretty much attention to. Do you have any idea how you get a healthy pineal gland?
Well, I just want to go back to something you said about between the eyes. It's sometimes known as the third eye, the epiphysis. That's
right.
Another name for it. So it's really interesting that now, it's treated that way.
But it's treated that way, but it's not the pineal gland. You're saying that's a connection to the thing in the middle of the brain.
Right. You can't get to, since the cranium surrounds the head, it surrounds the brain, you can't really get to the pineal gland directly. by massaging the front of the head. But who knows if something is stimulated and does act on the pineal gland. But what does definitely act on it is light from the sky, sunlight, daylight. That definitely affects the pineal gland.
And the pineal gland kind of tells us. It kind of sets another rhythm for us. And I'm going to tell you a story about a patient I once saw. His name was Herb. I'm going to call him Herb Hertz because he made up that name. And he came to see me, and he was delusional. He believed that he was a rock band musician, that he played guitar in a rock band. And his name was Wingate Stillwater III, was the name he made up for himself. And he believed that was true, and he went around life believing this to be true. Really, he was kind of a mousy guy who did little graphic things all day long in a small studio. But Herb's fantasy about being Wingate Stillwater III was kind of profound, and he believed the following story. He came to see me because friends sent him to me because he believed that Alexandra, of Nicholas and Alexandra, he was in love with her. But he believed that she would not pay attention to him as a musician because there was a flaw that he had as a musician. And so he was heartbroken. In fact, his fantasy went even further to say that instead Robert Redford had been the one who had taken her attention. So Herb comes to me and he says to me, "Armand, what could you do for me? Because I've lost Alexandra." Now, here I am, a very young, energetic therapist. But I was a drummer once. I was a musician. And I had my drumsticks there, which I used to do in between sessions. I would play drums. I would just do drum rhythms. And he said, "What are those?" And I said, "Oh, I'm a drummer also, Herb." And he said, "What are they for?" I said, "Well, they help me keep people keep rhythm." I said, "And that's the trouble with you. The trouble with you, Herb, is not that you're singing badly, but you're out of rhythm. What you need is a new rhythm section." I said, "You need somebody who could follow your rhythm more." I said, "And I'll be that guy for you." Well, I swear it worked. We talked in terms of where in life he's in rhythm, where in life he's not in rhythm. We kept the metaphor of music for a while, and he got better. He got better, meaning he lost the fantasy. He was no Lord on Wingate Stillwater. He went back to being who he really was. But we did it all through this metaphor of rhythms. Now, during the course of this, one of the things, Sherry, that we had to do was keep relating to different things in terms of rhythm. And it was not hard to do because there are so many rhythms in the body. Let's look at some of the fundamental rhythms that harmonize just with day and night.
Sure, there's sleep and wake cycle. I think that's one that everyone can relate to.
It's so obvious. I mean, you sleep and you wake, and if you disturb your sleep, you get wacky, mm-hmm. right?
Absolutely. Sleep deprivation causes hallucinations and a lot of very, very rundown feeling. It even affects the immune system.
The other cycle that people are not familiar with is cortisol. The cortisol cycle is an important cycle. What is cortisol?
It's one of the body endocrine chemicals, and it affects our sleep-wake cycle, for example, and our mood, for example.
How? It's an aggressive. It's more the aggressive power. No, tell me. Okay, more of the aggressive cortisol. If your cortisol is high, you feel energetic. If your cortisol is low, you feel less energetic. The cortisol rhythm works highest at one time and it's lower at other times. It's highest at dawn, meaning when people wake up, they tend to be more energetic than they do in the evening. See, one of the reasons, and the way they test through that is through urine tests. They kind of see, well, in the morning, is the cortisol in your urine here now high or low? A deficiency of cortisol leads very specifically to certain diseases that could clearly be seen as out-of-rhythm diseases. We'll talk about that more, too.
And I think cortisol is associated with depression. There are, as you say, endocrine diseases that are associated with changes or abnormalities in cortisol.
But what about intellectual performance? You know, everybody would think that intellectual performance is constant.
But it's not. It's really known to be best around noon. And they've actually done studies on that. And they've also looked at kids in school. Their intellectual function is better when they've had breakfast, for example. So there are many things that feed into our intellectual function, but certainly one of them is our cycling, day-night cycling, and our sleep-wake cycle.
Hmm. Body temperature. Now, that changes. I've known people who, when they sleep at night, they could drop 5 degrees. You know, you ever go to sleep at night, and then you go to sleep at maybe 10 o'clock, and by 2 o'clock you say, I'm freezing, but the temperature hasn't changed in the room? It's because your body temperature drops. Your body temperature has a cycle.
Right, and when women want to check ovulation when they're trying to get pregnant, for example, they look at their body temperature to see the prime time to have relations so that because they're ovulating at that time.
What is the prime time usually? Is it different for everybody?
It's during their menstrual cycle, mm-hmm. and it's reflected in the body temperature, which changes during ovulation.
Well, you talk about menstrual cycle, there you go with another great rhythm. I mean, probably the biggest of all rhythms, right?
It's certainly really important for our society.
It's the rhythm of birth. It's the rhythm of we wouldn't be here if it didn't exist.
That's right.
And that takes the daily variations, which we're talking about now, and puts them out to a monthly variation on a day-by-day difference. Day one, day two, day three, day four are all qualitatively different because of the menstrual cycle. There's a different something, a different slight something that is probably perceptible.
You know, I think women will tell you that they feel different at different times during the cycle. Some women feel it more than others. Some women are affected so significantly that their function is affected, and they have perimenstrual dysfunctional disorder. But most women find it that the cycle of the hormones is about as important as the cycle of external factors like stress, for example, like working, like travel.
Speaking with Sherry Siegel, a neurologist, associate here. We're talking about the different cycles, and we're talking about this because later in the program today, we're going to show you how these circles work, these cycles work. How often do we think to ourselves, you know, my mate and I are just not in harmony? Well, maybe it's not that you're not in harmony. Maybe your rhythms are not in harmony, and maybe you need to do something to do it. You know, I think that's what sex does. I think one of the things about sex is that post-sex, people kind of often go to a common rhythmic place. So that one of the balancers that people do is they kind of look for sex as a way of getting themselves to that place of commonality. But we're going to be talking about that because it's going to affect all of your relationships as you learn more about it. Talking about the different cycles, prolactin. Now, prolactin is highest at night. That's kind of fascinating, because what is one of the most observable functions of prolactin?
Well, it certainly affects a mom's ability to have milk for the baby.
That's lactate, as in lactate. But it's also one of the things that push you further away from intimacy. Now, so a prolactic response at night is kind of an interesting thing if it's highest at night. That means you have to kind of go over it. You have to get past it. Melatonin has a half-life of 45 minutes. What is that story? Only secreted at night can reset sleep onset through its synchronizing effect on the biological clock. How does that work?
Well, melatonin, people sometimes when they have fly across different time zones, try melatonin to re-regulate the sleep-wake cycle that's thrown off by changing time zones.
So eating turkey is a good idea.
Well, tryptophan sometimes affects sleep and wake as well.
Mm-hmm. All right. So now this all, your rhythms, if you understood them, you would think you would get the benefit of understanding something about the rhythms of your body. So now these are cycles and rhythms. Now let's go a little further. How about the rhythms that are, well, first of all, they change with age, don't they? What may be true about you today may not be true with you about tomorrow.
That's true. Actually, the pineal gland changes in size. They know that it's largest in children, and it actually shrinks during puberty. It plays what they believe is a major role in sexual development. It also plays a role in hibernation in animals, for example, and the ability to breed in a seasonal manner.
Well, is it better to have a big pineal gland or a small pineal gland?
I don't think they've ever decided which is better or worse.
Does size matter?
All we know is that it changes throughout our life cycle.
What's the relationship between the pineal gland and the hypothalamus?
They're very tightly related. The hypothalamus governs our thirst and our hunger, satiety, those things. And so the pineal gland does influence the hypothalamus. They work together.
In what way does it affect it? I mean, if does light sensitivity somehow spill over to the hypothalamus? Do you get more hungry when you wake?
Well, I think of hibernating animals, for example.
Good.
They go through the winter not eating at all. And so their pineal gland is governing them, telling them to sleep during the winter months, and also telling them that they're not hungry. They don't have to go out and seek food. So that's how they work together.
Fascinating stuff. What about the seasonal affective disorder, which is another example of that kind of thing, Sherry?
Well, SAD, or seasonal affective disorder, is the depression that some people suffer during the winter months. And the belief, or the theory, is that because there's less light, there are less hours of light during the day, people have greater depression.
So because some people, and some people don't.
Absolutely.
Well, why would that be?
Some people's pineal glands might be more sensitive and others less so. We don't know what role the retina plays in it. There are probably myriad other factors.
You know, and I'll bet it has a lot to do with heredity too, with your DNA. You know what you inherited? I'll bet your whole family is that way. You know, like if you look at some families, I've seen bedrooms that have, I used to live in a bedroom that had no shades. You don't need shades. So what? The light comes up. You sleep anyway. And I think in young kids, well, in children, they can have a larger pineal gland, and yet they could sleep through bright light. You know, if the kid's out and he doesn't feel like waking up, you know, it's not just going to be the fact that it's morning. As you get older, you get more sensitive to light. An interesting possible relationship. All right. Armand DeMille here with you with the Positive Mind. Brainwaves. Now, how about brainwave rhythms? You know, brainwaves. Do we have rhythms in the brain, too?
We sure do. We have actually different rhythms. And when people have a brainwave test, it's also known as an EEG or an electroencephalogram. That just means looking at the electrical currents that are in your brain. It's amazing to think that on a regular basis, you have electrical currents going through your brain. But when I think about the neurological system, that is the brain and the nerves in our arms and legs and in our spinal cord, I think of them working in two ways. One is through chemistry, and the other is through electricity. And so it makes sense that if we put electrodes on the brain itself or on the skull, we can actually look at the brain waves.
What are the different brain waves? Can you break them down? I mean, and how would you see them? Is it better to have one than the other?
It's really not a one better than another, but they come in at different times. For example, when we're having a nice deep sleep, our deepest restorative sleep, we're having delta waves. And so deep sleep, for example, if we put a brainwave test on there, we'd see big, wide, high level, high amplitude, big, wide delta waves. And then there are other waves that are interesting. The alpha waves, for example, when we're in a state of physical and mental relaxation, we're aware of what's happening around us. Those are our alpha waves.
But it's not a sleep wave, you know? It's a wave where you're aware, alert. So do we shoot for, is consciousness in consciousness, is alpha ideal?
It's not a matter that we are seeking to have that wave. It's that's the type of wave that exists when we're in that state.
Well, I suspect when I'm petting a cat, for example, I may go into my theta, you know? Theta, which is a more relaxed, it's like a state of sleepiness with reduced consciousness. I'm kind of like, oh, nice to pet the cat, right?
You'd be almost sleeping.
Yeah,
at,
I mean,
during
it's
your
kind
theta.
Of like it puts me out, right? Mm-hmm. And if I'm in a beta wave, you know, the beta, which is the first one that's consciously alert, where you feel a little agitated, you feel tense, alert, that seems to be more connected to the hyper-nervous part of us.
Yeah, those are the more alert stage. The beta and alpha are the more alert stages. The theta and delta are the more somnambulant or sleeping
Now, these
stages.
Are all rhythms.
Yes, they are.
They are, again, going through the rhythms of our body.
And in neurology, what we look for is a lack of rhythm, an asynchrony. And that means, for example, the rhythms on one side of the brain may be just fine, all in sync and going in a nice unified rhythm. But on the other side, for example, they may be out of sync. And so when people have something in their brains that doesn't belong, a brain tumor or a scar, for example, that can cause the brain waves to go out of rhythm. And sometimes may result in epilepsy, for example, or a seizure sometimes when the metabolism of the brain's not working how it should.
There's a theory, and this is a hard one. We're going to have to get to this after our break. There's a theory that you have in your brain and in your heart a series of different rhythms within the same organ. There's a theory that says, you know, I mean, when we want to check our heart, I was asking Sherry before, I said, well, when you take somebody's pulse, you're not feeling their heart. And Sherry said, of course you're feeling their heart. But no, you're feeling their pulse. You're feeling the blood flowing through. Your argument for that is...
Right. You're inferring that the heart rate is what you're feeling in the pulse. But sometimes you can be fooled.
You can be fooled. So now, is it possible that different chambers of the heart, since we know we have four chambers, have different rhythms? And if they did, would you really feel wacky? Might your heart short circuit?
Well, in some ways, that's the truth. Some the heart can go out of rhythm. And so sometimes when it's not beating the way it should, atrial fibrillation, for example, that's when the upper chambers are not really beating the way they should. They're just barely kind of tremoring. What happens is the blood can kind of build up there, a clot can form, and then when the rhythm goes back into full strength, the clot can be dispersed throughout the body.
So within any particular part, now here's our real question. If my right atrium doesn't talk to my left atrium, right, or if my upper chamber doesn't talk to my lower chamber in the same rhythm, right? So it's like we're talking two different rhythms. You know, I'm talking in a waltz rhythm and you're talking in a 4-4 rhythm, right? And we're trying to communicate between the two of us, but somehow there's something wrong. And you get a sense, something's wrong. I don't know what it is, but I feel out of sorts. I think out of sorts, which we're going to prove as we go further into this, is being out of rhythm, my friends. And this is what's fascinating. This is Armand DeMille with Sherry Siegel. We get the great opportunity of always thinking about something more to bring to you. And this one about brain rhythms and heart rhythms and the rhythms between people is fascinating to me because I'm a man who loves rhythm and loves music. As I'm sure so are you, Sherry.
Absolutely. I love it.
Yeah. So we're going to take a short break. When we come back, I'll play you a little music. And then we'll continue. And we are back with you. This is Armand DeMille with Dr. Gary Singel. We're talking about heart and brain rhythms. I mean, if you understood how complex this was, what an amazing machine the human body is. And then worse than that, the nervous system. What if you were to take every nerve and string it end to end? You know what I mean? I mean, and every artery and everything that conducts, that carries blood, Sherry. Did anybody ever figure out how many miles there are in every human body?
I'm sure someone's done that work.
You know what I mean? It would probably go from here to Sicily and back. You know,
or to the moon.
Right, or to the moon or back. Okay, this is Armand DeMille with you. We're talking about the rhythms of the body. And we're talking about the rhythms because we have a premise. The premise here is that, my premise is, that if you understand that you yourself can be out of rhythm with yourself, and that's easy, and you can see it because you feel it, you're out of sorts, you feel besides yourself, there are times you know you are not in harmony. Now, is that just physical harmony? If you work out in a gym and you come out of the gym and you feel fabulous, does that mean you've gotten everything back in harmony? Maybe so. Maybe what we're looking for is this kind of uniform rhythm to live with, because without it, we're at odds with ourselves. Now, I'm going to give you just a little technical piece here. A man's heart beats uniformly. And the heart is like a cylinder, a piston compresses, pushes out the blood and drives it into the body. The pressure that it pushes it out with is called the systolic pressure. When it comes around, at the moment, the cardiac muscle, the pressure decreases on its way back. And you talk to me, is it the blood coming back that's the diastolic pressure?
Mm-hmm. Diastolic, right.
Diastolic, okay. What they have found is that there is a thing called the golden proportion. The golden proportion is, that's why, you know, why is 120 over 80 good? You know, pressure, blood pressure. You know, you say, I got 120 over 80. You say, oh, that's great. Because the pressure should be 1.6 systolic higher than diastolic. 1.6 times. So that's the ideal. Now, this is called the golden proportion, and it appears throughout the human body, not just in the heart. They say that when different parts of the body go outside of the golden proportion, it winds up creating their own kind of arrhythmias. A guy named Zetkoff, who organized the cardiac cycle pursuant to this golden proportion, he said, this is the stuff that builds life. There were other Russians as well who did great work on trying to find variants of it. What you know the work of Slutsky?
Really, just from what I've read to prepare for this, but he's someone who is new to me.
Geomagnetic field theory, you know. He was looking for this different oscillations, and he too found that when you go outside of this natural 1.6 to 1, you wind up in trouble, in different disharmonies. Now, here's my case. Can your heart have more than one rhythm? Can your brain have more than one rhythm? Who says that the pineal gland just doesn't sit there, it pulses, right?
It certainly has cycles.
What do you mean? I mean, does it go, what keeps the blood going in and out of it?
Well, our heart pumps the blood to different parts of the brain, and so the pineal is part of the brain, so the blood passes by there.
Okay, but the blood passes by there. Are they just static, or do they do anything? Are they like the kidney, which, you know, is an active organ, which kind of gets, well, you're going to come in here, I'm going to push you out? Do you think that all of these small things, the hypothalamus, they're just kind of latent and they just lay there and then the blood kind of pushes through? Or do you think they react and they have an action on the blood itself?
They're reactive.
Right. So they have a rhythm. You got a slow pineal gland or a slow hypothalamus or a slow thyroid, and it's going to change maybe your whole body. because it is doing something. It is affecting the entire body. So your whole rhythm could be going one way, and if your thyroid's out of whack or your pituitary's out of whack, it's going to affect everything. And there again, we are looking to try to find some form of harmony. And like Miller said, give me music because it creates the harmony I'm looking for. I think our very desire, our very wish to find the perfect music is in a way to find ourselves in that balance.
I think it does. It brings us back to a sense of harmony, a sense of completeness or things being in order. There's entropy and we don't like that. And so the whole idea of having orderliness is something that the body craves, I believe. And in fact, when patients suffer from migraine, for example, a lot of migraineurs, when they go out of their usual order of things and their usual daily schedule, sometimes their headaches act up.
Wow, what a fascinating idea that the onset of a migraine could be a shift in the interactions, in the synchronization. Wow, it's really fascinating. In an attempt to understand what makes us tick, researchers have been probing various regions of the brain, such as the premotor cortex that helps us make motor movement possible, the auditory cortex, responsible for processing what we hear. But neuroscientists now say communication between regions as opposed to within the areas themselves may be the key that has eluded analysis until now, in part because of technological obstacles. This is where Earl Miller did the stuff. Are you familiar with that, Sherry?
Again, it's something I've learned only from preparing for this show.
What did you learn about Earl Miller's work?
Well, I know that he hypothesized that there were two groups of neurons that communicate with each other. And when they're coordinated, and their rhythms and the coordination of those rhythms, and the synchrony is very important.
And so generally, there are so many, we are looking for what they call phases, and they talk about being felt in phase, and that there are times you, the audience, people listening, have great difficulty feeling like you're in phase or in rhythm.
He said that the rhythms, when they're not coordinated, one group sends information over while the other one might not be ready to receive it. So, and that can happen in reverse as well. So in some ways, if there's a lack of synchrony, things are not, the information's not being passed with ease.
Hmm. Our telephone number here is 212-209-2900. What about your own rhythm? And have you ever tried to communicate with somebody and just had a sense that your rhythms were off? I mean, certainly happens when you get somebody who's too nervous. You know, the man comes home from work, he's exhausted. The woman comes home from work, she's exhausted from a hard day's work. Her husband is sitting at home like he has all day taking care of the kids. And she walks in the door and he wants to have a conversation with her. And she says, not now, let me rest first. Or not better yet, but more often she'll say, give me a drink. What is she trying to do with that drink? She's trying to find her rhythm to be at home. Mm-hmm. She's trying to bring herself into rhythm. We learn how to do it through meditation. We learn it through exercise. We learn it through relaxing. We learn how to bring ourselves into rhythm, but I think we need to pay attention to it. And I've learned a trick that helps you pay attention to it more. And it's really counting 1, 2, 3, 4. It's really a number trick that I've used my whole life. If I'm walking somewhere, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4. I have no idea why just repeating it over and over again brings me to some place where I'm calmer.
Do you know the first time that I learned to meditate, Armand, I was told to use numbers and to basically name each breath a number, and we were given the option of going from 1 to 4. or 1 to 8. Isn't that interesting?
Yes, and there it would be. It would be doing double. I mean, it's just like music. 4-4 time as opposed to 8 time. If you think of the brain as an orchestra, the thalamus, there's one of our great organs, is the conductor. Tell me about the thalamus in the brain.
Well, I think about the thalamus as the interlocutor. It's information coming in from the spinal cord and the rest of the body, comes into the thalamus sends it out to the areas that are most important or activates the areas in the cortex, the thinking part of the brain, that are most aligned with the information that's coming into it. And it also does the reverse. So information coming from the cortex goes down through the thalamus, and the thalamus directs it to where it should go,
so it really is the conductor.
Mm-hmm.
It really is the conductor. The players are in the cortex. When the conductor makes a move, the players follow.
But in both directions, it can be in the body. So the information coming from the arms and the legs and the spinal cord, up through the spinal cord, comes up into the thalamus and then out into the thinking part of the brain. And then the thinking part of the brain can send information back down the other way.
You know, one of the men, I forget which of the scientists it was in the article, he said, when the brain is awake, Linnaeus it was, when the brain is awake, neurons in the cortex and thalamus oscillate at the same high frequency called gamma. Now, what is a gamma frequency?
It's a frequency of stability.
Stability. We're looking for it. It's like a river dance performance, he said. Some cells are tapping in harmony, and some are silent, creating myriads of patterns that represent the properties of the external world. Cells with the same rhythm form circuits to bind information in time. And this is what we're kind of looking for. We're kind of looking for the harmony of cells. 212-209-2900. It's kind of an interesting thing to be talking about. Let's hear if it pulls up any callers' curiosity. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, this is Eloise calling from New Orleans.
Hello, Eloise from New Orleans.
Yes, I listen to you regularly.
Thank you.
I've always been fascinated by the relationship between colors and music, in that both of them have a frequency and they have a rhythm. 440 beats per second is the A that most American orchestras tune to, you know. And also colors have a frequency as well. And also, as it relates to your uniform rhythm principle, I've been told that 60 beats per minute is a magical beat to get people really into a song. So I was wondering...
Well, give me an example of 60 beats per minute.
Well, that would be 1 beat per second.
Oh, 1 beat per second.
Right.
So.
I understand you're a drummer.
Yeah.
So 60 or 120. I wondered if that had something to do with your magical proportions of 1.6 to 1.
Oh, yeah. Of course. Oh, how brilliant.
Well, thank you.
Oh, my gosh almighty. What's your name?
Eloise.
Eloise, what are you doing in New Orleans?
I play the bass and the cello.
Do you?
Yes.
And you play the bass and the cello in New Orleans?
Yes, professionally. Hmm. That's what I do.
Wow. And what do you do? Can we ever hear your music?
Yes, you can.
You have your cello right there?
Not right here, no. No, all my instruments are in their cases right now. Okay. I have a Barenbaum, but...
You have a Barenbaum?
That's out.
What is a Barenbaum?
It's a one-string... It's a Brazilian instrument.
Bring that a little closer. Bring it a little closer. Let me hear it.
It's just got a baling wire hooked to a piece of wood.
Wow, and you play that as well.
Well, that's used in the Brazilian martial art form of capoeira.
So do you do much dancing down there, especially?
Oh, yes.
I imagine that you must be one of those people at Mardi Gras that we can't just get lost for like 18 days or something.
No, not one of those, of course.
Well, I don't know. I don't know if it's a good thing or a bad thing.
Of course I am.
Yeah. Sherry wants to ask you a question.
You know, what you said, Eloise, reminded me of synesthesia. That's
what I'm talking about.
I see. That's so interesting. And you're right. That's the misinterpretation. It's the confusion or the connection between
numbers.
Colors and numbers, for example. So it's not
exactly
a confusion, but it's a connection that some of the rest of us non-synesthetes don't do. We may look at numbers and they could be any old color, but people who have that ability, the synesthetes, like athletes, are able to look at numbers and look at letters, and they their brain assigns those letters and numbers certain colors.
I actually wanted to name a band Synesthesia.
That's a wonderful name.
Nice name.
The other thing I wanted to discuss was, you know, certain colors or you know, brightness is used in torture. You know, other kinds of light qualities can be very calming, you know. And also certain sounds can cause great agitation. And, you know, there are these sound weapons that they're using to either agitate.
I was just seeing them using the sound weapons, yeah. Sound weapons, except that, you know, I think it was John Stewart who said, you know, they finally invented a weapon where you can cover your ears with your hands and at least defeat the weapon somewhat. You know what I mean?
Very high tech.
Rhythm goes right through your body, though.
Yeah.
That frequency. Anyway, I was interested in asking about that.
Well, thank you, and thank you for listening to us from down there in New Orleans.
Oh,
and
yes, I promote it widely.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
I thought when Eloise was mentioning those things that go through your body, when you scratch nails on a blackboard, there's a frequency.
There's something in there,
right?
That says not right.
Very uncomfortable.
212-209-2900. Let's take another call. Hi there. This is Armand DeMille. You're on the air.
Oh, hi, Armand. That was an interesting call. I was also just thinking about the ratio rhythms, and you said 1.6 is the golden rhythm or number, and that is a multiple of 4, isn't it, really? You were talking about counting.
Oh, there it is again. So I'm counting 1 to 4. It just doesn't stop.
Yeah.
People keep teaching me about myself all the time.
Audience is so smart. They come up with these brilliant theories.
What's your name?
My name is Kathy.
Kathy?
Years ago I read a book called Rhythms of Vision. It was it was written by Lawrence Blair. It was his PhD thesis, and the first person to get his PhD in the occult from Oxford.
Mm.
And he had a lot of interesting scientific facts about rhythms. One about sound, for instance, which was like taking a symbol, I mean a musical symbol, and if you put sand on it and you hit it, it would make a pattern. That pattern that it makes is the absence, I mean, is where the energy goes, and where the sand remains is where the energy isn't.
Wow, interesting, fascinating. Kathy?
The pattern that remains, though, is the sound of the languages such as Sanskrit, the spoken ancient scriptures, you know, letters from scriptures, and that could apply not only to, say, Hindi, the Sanskrit, but also Hebrew, etc.
Well, let me ask you something, Kathy. In personal life, have you ever sensed being out of rhythm with somebody that you care about?
Oh, yes.
You know, isn't it kind of amazing? We're kind of talking about it. I love learning all that we learn over this this world of trying to find out information, and I'm forced to do it because I have to bring something to the radio. It's like a great discipline. So as I begin to understand what it means like to be out of rhythm with somebody, and I can see that, and now that I'm aware of it more, I find myself trying to find where is the rhythm commonality. I don't have to go to their rhythm, but where can I bring them closer to mine and bring myself closer to theirs, as opposed to trying to force them to be mine and force me to be theirs? When you find yourself out of rhythm with somebody, what do you do? How do you get through it?
Well, I think the best way, one of the ways that I do it now, is to just try to be still until the rhythm kind of comes back on its own.
So you find it in stillness, there'll be a balance. It's an interesting thing. You know, you just let everything disappear. Let everything go for a minute. Just decrease the amount of stimulation. I want to thank you for calling in. Where are you calling from, by the way? What part of our fair city?
I'm not in your fair city. I'm on Long Island.
Well, that's right.
Yeah.
Or fair tri-state area.
Yes. I'm actually driving while I'm speaking to you.
Okay, good. Well, thank
my
you.
My way to Kingsbury City. Thank you. Bye-bye. Now.
Thank you. Bye-bye. We have time for one more call. 212-209-2900. Let's grab one more call if you're there. Hi, this is Armand DeMille.
Hi, I'm so glad you're taking me. I wondered about rhythm. Why, you know, so many people have arrhythmia of the heart.
Uh-huh.
And I keep thinking, why couldn't you go through the night, put a metronome by your bed? And wouldn't your heart gradually reach for it? Because, as you said, there's groups of rhythms, like women nurses and groups who have a periods all at the same time when they get together. They follow, there must be a drawing or something that is amongst us. And,
wow.
And yes. I keep wondering if that wouldn't, because the doctors just say, arrhythmia, take medicine.
Right.
It never works.
I understand. What do you think, Sherry?
It's a great question, and it would be wonderful if that worked. Sometimes when the heart's not acting the way it should, it's because some of the heart muscle may be affected, and the electrical charge doesn't go through the scarred muscle or the muscle that's not in prime function the way it should. So that's why they recommend medicines to allow it to beat in synchrony as it normally would.
But, you know, I think part of what you're also addressing
is
probably, sure, why people look to be close to somebody who they could hold and be close to. And probably the biggest beauty of relationships is finding a heart that you could find and be in rhythm with. Maybe
wow.
That's what it's about.
Oh, and guess what? I'm from New Orleans.
Are you too? That's great.
Yes.
Synchronicity.
And one of those colors that affect the personality is what do they call that? They use it in prisons. It's a brown, but it's not. It's a pinkish color.
Uh-huh.
And they use it to calm people. So that's not new.
Well, your voice is calming. I want to thank you for being with us. We have to be going now.
I appreciate your program so
sure.
much.
Thank you. This is Armand DeMille with you with Sherry Siegel, The Positive Mind. Keep yourself in rhythms, my friends. We will be back with you tomorrow at 1 p.m.